Beef stroganoff my ass.
Trexploration.
Hello and welcome back to Trexploration. I'm Albie.
He tasks me, and I shall have his beef stroganoff.
I'm Chris. Khan, we are talking Khan. Happy
We're
Star
finally
Trek
here.
Day.
Happy
wow.
Star Trek Day, one and all. Live long, prosper.
Live long and prosper.
Join us in celebrating this release, this long-awaited release of the Khan audio drama.
And as we all know, Khan audio dramas are best served cold.
That's right. In your earbuds, in your space earbuds.
In your earbuds. Hey, they did something for Star Trek Day this year. It's been a while. They're probably
while,
like,
anyway.
We'll release it September 9th. Oh, and somebody in the office was like, actually, if you do it on the 8th, it's Star Trek Day. They're like, what's Star Trek Day? Anyway.
Well, we got it coming and going here today. So. it's just been a delight. And like I said, I've been looking forward to this. This is it's episode one. So what
Paradise.
Yes. So
after Michelle Paradise, probably.
Maybe. And it was written by Kirsten Beyer and David Mack, based on a story by Nicholas Meyer. And who directed it, Albie?
Fred Greenhalgh. Dude, are they hiring people that they can't pronounce on purpose?
He directed all of them.
I'm thinking. Written by Kirsten Beyer and David Mack, based on a story
Kirsten
by Nicholas
Beyer. Kirsten.
Kirsten.
Kirsten. Kirsten
oh,
Beyer.
Kirsten. Like Kirsten yeah. Dunst. And David Mack, based on a story by Nicholas Meyer, directed by Fred Greenhalgh. Is that right?
Greenhalgh. I think so.
All right. Yeah, I've been excited about this. I've been looking forward to it. It's a cool release. We were fortunate enough to get early access to the first four episodes. I, however, only listened to the first episode because I want to theorize. I want to guess what's going to happen. That's standard for you, though, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you know me. I do one episode, then a show, another episode, then a show. And if somebody is just joining us because they're jazzed about the Khan thing, Albie usually binges everything in an hour and a half, even if it's 7 hours of material.
Yep.
And I'll always wait because I never want to be unduly influenced by knowing what might come or knowing what will come for the sake of speculating what might come. So I really enjoy being as authentic as I would be if I was watching this or listening to this week to week to week to week. So
yeah, me, I'm like, Marie Battelle, she's a rubber Gorn.
That's right.
That other lady, she's a vampire.
So
I can see your point.
So that's just my preferred way of doing things. And if you're joining us for the first time at Trexploration because you want to hear somebody discuss this audio drama, welcome. Thank you for finding us.
Welcome.
And we hope you enjoy what we have to say about it.
I
want to know, though, Albie, huh?
Yes.
What is your experience with audio drama? How do you feel about audio drama? Are you a fan of audio drama?
This was my journey. Just like Star Trek was my gateway to probably classical music and symphonic music. Nick at Night was my way into old-time radio. Because when I started watching Nick at Night, my two favorite shows were Jack Benny and Burns and Allen and the TV shows. And then I did more research and was able to find out that they did radio shows. So this was days before internet. You had to actually get like buy cassettes of old time radio shows.
Right.
And I started collecting Jack Benny program and Burns and Allen and listened to them. And I just loved like the theater of the mind, the audio dramas, and that's about the same time I got into Star Trek audiobooks, probably.
I see.
And,
okay.
And they're you know, some of those, I mean, they have three or four people reading them and some actors and stuff, and there's music and special effects and stuff. So I've always really, really enjoyed audiobooks. And I used to record episodes and movies on audio.
So a lot of what you're talking about, though, isn't made as an audio drama. It's either someone reading a book or you listening to the audio of a television show.
Right, right. So I didn't really get into audio dramas until after my obsession with old-time radio, and I found other programs that they did that were more, even though they were like based on radio shows, they were more like audio dramas, if that makes sense.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just curious to know, you know, where you stand with the art form, because I think for a lot of people, this is an anachronism, and they probably think audio books as opposed to just like a straight radio drama, like something made to listen to, like a dramatic play.
Like War of the Worlds. I think that was my first audio drama.
Yeah, think about Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy was a radio show first. Mm-hmm. But yeah, for me, it was a little bit different because, as you know, I collect the old radios. That's the one like right there. And when I started collecting them, they're all AM or what they called BC band back then, broadcast, because there was no such thing as FM. So you get these AM radios and you're turning around the dial. It's just like a lot of talk, some music. But I found that the later I listened to it at night, the more interesting it got. And that's when I discovered stations that would actually dedicate an hour or maybe 2 hours to playing old-time radio shows. And I was hooked because, number one, I was falling in love with collecting old radios. But number two, it all of a sudden opened up a world of entertainment that I didn't really know about except in theory. Like you know that they did have radio shows back then and people make fun of, I'm going to talk like this. See, man. Yeah. And
yeah, but fully dressed without a smile.
And it wasn't until I discovered them that I realized that a lot of them are much more well written than you might anticipate. A lot of them are a lot more subtle and well acted, like especially well acted. Some of these radio actors from back then were excellent, bar none. They could, I think, go toe to toe with any film actor or TV actor of the current era because they were just so good at it. And I subsequently became a big fan of radio dramas, comedies, and then, of course, Sirius XM came around, and they have radio classics.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So they play that stuff like 24/7 now. Yeah, so I have the radio classics on my preset, so I'll listen to that quite a bit. I especially love when they do Christmas in July, which they just did several weeks ago. So that's a long way of me saying that radio drama is something that's near and dear to me. So to hear that Star Trek was going to produce not only an actual audio drama made for the ear, not just reading a book or a teleplay that somebody couldn't sell, but producing an actual drama with lead actors.
Yeah.
I was over the moon. And then to find out that it's about Khan, well, forget about it. So basically what you like to say, take my money, right?
Yeah, take my money.
So.
So I've listened to a lot of audio dramas over the years because the old time radio, usually they're grouped in and I'm like a digital hoarder. So as soon as like the Internet Archive came about and all the old time radio stuff. And there was, I think like in the 80s and early 2000s, there was different audio drama series for the radio. So
there were a couple of throwbacks. There's still one. CBS did a Playhouse. Still,
yeah.
BBC still does
CBS
audio dramas.
Playhouse thing that was good.
Yeah. That lasted, I think, until the 90s.
Yeah, and they're still all out there. I think some of my favorite were Rocky Fortune. It had Frank Sinatra. And then X-1 if you're into sci-fi. That's always
great.
X-1.
One of my favorites, X-1 was always great. Suspense, always
Suspense.
Great. And as far as just like serials, yours truly, Johnny Dollar with Bob Bailey. Such an amazing radio actor. I can't believe that he wasn't more popular. And then, of course, of the Great Gildersleeve and Fibber, McGee and Molly and Life of Riley. I hate Life of Riley. Life of Riley was the template for every dumb jerk husband.
And they're still doing that today.
With a saint of a wife that puts up with him.
That's
was
how I learned to be a husband.
The template.
And that's why
that's how Kevin, Jackie Gleason and Kevin James and anybody in between, that's how they all have careers.
Fred Flintstone.
Thanks to... Yeah, that was William Bendix played Riley. Fred Flintstone, that was just Jackie Gleason.
Yeah. Art. So what is the genesis of this project? What do we know? How did this get started, Chris?
I was happy to look that up. We had been hearing things about it. Essentially, Nick Meyer, who was the creative force behind Wrath of Khan, who brought the project together and made it a viable film, had some ideas, and he wanted to do a limited series for Paramount Plus. But it turned out that it was only going to be a 3-episode series.
Oh.
And this is going back like almost 10 years ago. This was back in 2017. And just due to the small scope of the project and the high cost of producing it, they said, no, we can't really do it. It's just the economies of scale don't work, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
And I want to thank Wikipedia.
I'm getting 3 episodes.
I got a lot of this. I got a lot of this from Wikipedia, but I think it's pretty succinct from the stuff that we had getting in dribs and drabs over the years. So, I think that instead what they decided was, and it's saying here that Kurtzman was instrumental in this. He said that he wanted to do more scripted podcasts in the Star Trek universe. And back in 2022, Meyer announced Star Trek Khan SETI Alpha 5. So I guess it was called Khan SETI Alpha 5.
Okay.
And they expanded the 3-episode arc that he wanted to do into this 9-episode radio play, which makes sense.
Nine.
I guess the 3 episodes would have been about a half an hour.
Okay.
So that's right there, 6. And then if you have an unlimited budget, because it's all, you know, theater of the mind.
Dude, special
you have
effects
a
nice.
Yeah, a TV budget for an audio drama, essentially. Yeah. I guess you can slap on 3 more episodes,
yeah.
Right?
So what do we got? 9 in total, right? Through November.
So
3rd,
nine, yeah. So 9 in total. And hopefully this does well, because if Kurtzman was really serious about doing more audio drama, hopefully this will be sort of like the vanguard in a new series of Star Trek entertainment that appeals to me especially. So
I'll take it. I'm
really happy.
I'm into old radios too, you know. You kind of got me into that. But I'm more of a, like, the furniture radios, so that's just stupid that I collect huge old radios from the 40s.
I don't have any room for that.
I know. You actually do.
I have 2.
You have a nice home.
Yeah, but I mean, I have the one furniture radio, the one radiophono that's in the family room. And then I have another one that used to be in the living room right by the front door where the credenza is now. You'll remember it if you think in your mind's eye. But that's out in the garage now, because I didn't want to have the house taken over by my stuff.
I got a nice one from 1929, and I just got that because that was the year my dad was born. So I had to buy it when
I saw
it. Yeah. So,
oh, that's great.
And of course, I convert them to play MP3s and Bluetooth. And
right.
All that
do what I don't.
So I can listen to my old time radio shows.
There you go. Yeah. You just turn on that radio and then play your
basically
your
it's
phone
a speaker,
or something,
basically.
Right?
But yeah, a couple of the big ones I got still work, which is cool. You know, AM
right.
only.
So yeah, that's mine too. I mean, I have a couple of AM FMs or AM shortwave. So I have one that's got like AM, shortwave, police band, military band, the whole all nine.
That's
really
cool.
It's really cool. So, yeah, I mean, you can get a lot of stuff. I was on the big one down in the family room when I first fired it up. I was able to hear like the BBC because of the shortwave band. Like you can hear stuff from
across. Bounces off the
atmosphere,
right?
If people like shortwave or people like radio in general, there's a whole new series came out called Scene on the Radio. And I think it was part of the On the Media podcast. They played an episode of it also on 99% Invisible. But the first season was all about the rise of like right-wing radio and how like the whole radio industry was transformed. The second season, which just dropped, was all about shortwave and what people are doing with shortwave radio now. So shortwave is still a thing. It's still a viable force for a lot of communities. So anyway, we're getting all radio geek here. Let's get back to Khan.
Khan.
Instead of SETI Alpha 5, it's now just Star Trek Khan. Khan!
Khan, if this is a success, I want like the next season of Enterprise. Just saying. Putting it out there.
I think that'd be fantastic.
Who's ever listening? Yep.
So yeah, if anybody, I'm wearing on the YouTube channel, you can see I'm wearing my Superman shirt in honor of Star Trek's own genetically engineered Superman.
Khan. Okay.
The
we
other
should
thing,
say, the actors, we got Naveen Andrews as Khan, a great Khan in my opinion in this first episode. Renschmidt.
Renschmidt. I love Renschmidt. Right. As Marla.
Marla MacGyvers. She's a good right. MacGyvers.
MacGyvers. MacGyvers.
Was great.
What
Who
was
else
her name?
Do we have?
The other real main one is a woman named Sonia Cassidy, who plays a scientist named Rosalind Lear, who is trying to uncover Khan's past. And
right.
then, of course, we have stunt casting. We have guest casting. Because of the time frame in which this takes place, George Takei reprises his role as Captain Sulu.
Oh
and
my.
Tim Russ himself revises his role as Ensign Tuvok.
That is so,
so
cool.
This is the Tim Russ serving on the Excelsior underneath Captain Sulu, as seen in that Voyager episode. The memory one, whatever
it was.
Yeah,
I don't remember the name. I'm a bad Trekkie, I guess. I liked the framing of this. And I think Rosalind Lear is basically the frame, right? She causes this to happen and trying to look back and the ticking clock, and we'll get into all that. But first, the episode recap.
Alrighty. Ding, 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 ding. The double bell rings three times, and the Starfleet Civilian Resource Allocation Committee is called to order. Dr. Rosalind Lear petitioned the committee, asking that Starfleet take her to SETI Alpha 5. She has received from an undisclosed source transcripts of Khan's experiences there after being exiled by Kirk, recorded by historian Marla MacGyvers. This is only a fraction of the information MacGyvers collected. Lear wants to go back and retrieve the full record of everything that happened. This is met by strenuous objection by Captain Sulu, who is also at the hearing. Everything that went down was preserved in Kirk's personal logs, which had been classified since his death, presumably on the Enterprise B, 3 months prior. Best leave Khan and everything he represents on the ash heap of history. Lear challenges Sulu. Why so reticent to dig into Khan's legacy? What are you afraid the historical record might reveal? If Kirk's intentions were as noble as you claim, then surely the full story will exonerate him from any wrongdoing. Sulu says that he'll bring Lear to SETI Alpha 5 on the Excelsior. Once in orbit around the planet, Lear beams down to Khan's old settlement with Ensign Tuvok. There, they find a hidden storage chamber with like a million old tapes recorded by MacGyvers. Framing device established, we pick up with Khan where we left off in Space Seed. Khan is borderline euphoric about the new Eden that SETI Alpha 5 represents. It is everything that Kirk said it would be, and Khan has renewed visions of building an eternal empire. Kirk was also good on his word that he would give Khan everything he needed to establish the colony, including emergency food rations, seed stock, generators, and medications, complete with a med lab. This last find especially excites Khan's followers Ursula, who is a medic, and her partner, Mado. It turns out that augment females cannot reproduce. Their creators harvested all their eggs at birth so they could control the augment population. All of the children on the colony were rescued from a lab by Khan before he left Earth, including some embryos. Ursula hopes that she can use the new medical equipment to enable Mado's womb to carry one of those embryos to term. She explains as much to Marla, who is helping them catalog the medications. Also, because canon, Marla learns that the augment men were left fertile because all the sex would mellow them out or something like that. The writers needed a way to explain La'an's existence after all. Yes. And both Ursula and Mado let Marla know that the real reason Khan brought her down was as a plan B, in case the fertility treatments failed. Marla has already had a spat with Khan, insisting that she keep her own quarters instead of moving in with him. She claims that she will never be seen as more than his woman otherwise, and she wants to find her own place in the community, separate from him. This new infertility revelation is one step too far, and she digs out her hidden communicator and tries to hail the Enterprise for rescue. Khan discovers this and is furious. He destroys the communicator and tells Marla there is no going back. She blasts Khan for just seeing her as a potential broodmare for his empire, and the two are on the outs. In other exile drama, Joachim. That was the tall guy who was not credited in the movie.
Joachim.
He was Joachim. Yeah, but they call him Joachim in this. Okay. In other Exile drama, Joachim shows up and it is revealed that he is only half Augment with the normal mother who died in childbirth. Khan proclaims that there are not others here and names Joachim as his champion to help unite the colony. Speaking of which, there is a dissident named Hugo who is openly questioning Khan's ability to lead. Khan gives him a choice. Follow me, without question, or be exiled, to live or die on your own. You will never be welcomed back here. Hugo chooses obedience, but another one of Khan's loyal generals, Ivan, doesn't buy it. He waylays Hugo and tosses him off a cliff. Looks like this new Eden has quite a few snakes. Snap back to the present. Lear is reveling in the newly discovered treasure trove of records. She says she needs months to review everything. Tuvok tells her that Captain Sulu is giving her 5 more days tops at SETI Alpha 5 to complete her work. And there we end part 1 of Star Trek Khan.
Woo! So, this is SETI Alpha 5?
This is SETI Alpha 5. I cannot believe how intricate this first episode was. I don't know what I was expecting, but I think I was expecting less. How about you? I guess maybe that's my first impression. It surpassed my expectations.
Yes, it greatly surpassed my expectations. I was thinking it would basically be like people reading a script, kind of. But yeah. Once I found out who was cast as these actors, I had a little bit more confidence in it, and I was still blown away by the production quality and the writing, quite frankly, because new Trek, you always get scared. You don't know.
I think it might help that it was a story developed by Nick Meyer.
Yes.
Who is much more old school when it comes to the type of writing that he does, much more cinematic in the type of writing he does. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it was written, fleshed out by 2 novelists. So I think that novelists have a much more long-form mind because they have the latitude to be able to do that. So I think they're much more used to taking disparate plot elements, graphing them out over time, and then slowly weaving everything together. So I was pleasantly surprised by the fact that they were able to go the more, I guess, literary route with this because they have the luxury of time. And then they don't have to worry about like getting the production done in a certain amount of days with a certain amount of turnaround. It's just a completely different animal. So therefore, it comes across as something unlike anything we've heard in the current iteration of Trek.
They definitely painted the picture. Like as I was listening, I almost said watching because I was watching in my mind's eye. And it was amazing. And I could just like, and a lot of that was also the sound design and Foley was amazing too. And I did listen to it the second time. First time I listened to it on my computer monitor, which is silly. But the second time I listened to it through my surround sound. And wow, just a great job overall. I am intrigued with this story. Like it's, I didn't think I would be as much because we know the beginning and we know the end. So we're just, this is the middle, you know? The middle's not, you know, part 2 out of 3. You know, it's not the best.
It's the 2 towers. Nobody's favorite is the 2 towers, right?
Yeah. Right? Trees walking. Is that 1 or 2?
It's 2.
I don't know. But Khan, I've always seen him as a villain, you know, because I was, what, 8 maybe when Wrath of Khan came out, right?
Sure.
He's the bad guy. I love Captain Kirk. But listening to this, I think they're framing Khan as the protagonist, right?
I have thoughts, but before we get to my thoughts and before we discuss this further, we want to know what everybody out there thinks of this audio drama. Give us your impressions. Give
Where
us your
you
history
listen?
With
when
audio
did you
drama.
How
Tell
did
us
you listen?
If you think this is, yeah.
What did you think?
Do you think this is a good, did you think this is a good direction for current Trek to go into? Do you want them to explore this vein more? You can do so right here on the YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/AtrekExploration. Tell us in the comments below. Tell us below. You can also follow us on Patreon if you want to support the show. Patreon.com/TrekExploration. You can also become a member here on YouTube to support the show. There's so many ways.
It's that easy. Just click join.
Just click join. Join us, man. Join us. One of us. One of us.
One of us.
Gobble. one of us. So you can also find us on Blue Sky. It's at trexploration.bluesky.social. You can find us on Instagram at trexplorationpod. You can send us an email at trexplorationpod@gmail.com. Send us those emails. Tell us what you think. You can mail us a letter if you'd like to, or maybe even some regolith from SETI Alpha 5. Give me a SETI eel. P.O. Box 542, Bayport, New York, 11705. That's P.O. Box 542, Bayport, New York, 11705. And you can also support the show in a one-time manner using this QR code that Albie is popping up right now. Woo! It is for a PayPal donation. You can give us any amount that you see fit. You can also do that at Buy Me a Coffee. That's buymeacoffee.com/trexploration. You can join the likes of our lifetime member, the omnipotent Willard,
the
who
omnipotent
bought
Willard!
Us some coffee and more. Thank you, Willard, for all
Thank
of your
you,
support.
Willard, for everything.
You can also follow in the trailblazing footsteps of our new YouTube member. That's Christian Daljo. Christian, we're going to get that name right one day, but thank you so much for your support here on YouTube.
He is the viewer of the after shows.
Right. He's the one viewer of the after shows that we produce for all of our YouTube members and our Patreon supporters. And you should join Christian and become one of our crew of intrepid Trexplorers who are already serving in our fleet. That includes Cadet Listen Linda, Cadet Rick Tatro, our Lieutenant Commander Scott Seligman, and Cosplay Dad. And, of course, our Captain on the Bridge, Captain Charles from
Captain
Texas.
Charles.
Thanks, one and all, for all of your support.
Thanks
and
to everyone.
To everyone who follows us both on Patreon and here on YouTube. Just like, subscribe, share, do what you can to support and
Get
to spread
out.
The word about Trexploration.
Remember, when we hit 1,000, we grow those mustaches.
Those mustaches. It's going to be awful, and you don't want to miss it. You
It'll
don't
be silly.
Miss
it's
it.
Worth it. Hit that subscribe, and then log into your other accounts and hit that subscribe.
Yes, please do. Please do. And let's keep this Trexploration ball rolling so we can talk about Khan.
Yes,
so,
Khan!
Albie, you're picking up just what I was thinking about this. I mean, for all that we know about Khan, he sure doesn't seem like that bad a guy.
Not really.
I was of two minds. So when he was talking, he was genuinely charismatic. I think that comes down to the writing and Naveen Andrews being a really good
Naveen
actor.
Andrews, yeah,
for people who don't know, Naveen Andrews played Saeed on Lost. That's probably
Saeed.
What you know him from, if you know him from anything. That's what I know him best
yeah,
from.
Yeah, he was great in that.
He was always so good in that. And he's really just taken up the role of Khan. And he's a natural, like, right from the beginning. Like, it's not like he's finding his footing or anything. He's come on, and this is Khan. And this is a more persuasive and eloquent Khan than we see. I mean, I know Nick Mara has a thing where he loves his characters, especially his villains, to start screaming Shakespeare. Khan does a little bit of that. I think that we have that loquaciousness here, but it's a little bit more, I don't know, inspiring to me. It's not just somebody screaming out quotes from Hamlet or something. So is that what you were picking up on, Albie?
Yeah, I felt like he's the protagonist because I listened to this first episode, I think, 4 or 5 times now, and I like Khan more and more every time. And I'm like, oh, great, this is going to be like Wicked and like all these other things where I thought this one thing this whole time, and now it's going to be the other way. But I don't know. They can't sway me too much because, I mean, guy was responsible for Spock's death, you know? And that's
my main
childhood trauma that I'm still trying to deal with.
Well, he makes it. That guy's going to make it. He's going to stay
Are
alive
you sure?
longer than anybody.
I don't know if I want to watch The Search for Spock.
He even makes it to another timeline.
Yeah, I still cry. Makes a fat man cry.
But what was brilliant about the way they wrote Khan here is he is genuinely inspiring, but he is such a manipulative piece of crap.
Oh, yeah.
Everything he does is in service to what he wants. So he's sort of a master manipulator when it comes to that. And I think that's why he's at odds with Marla. I like the fact that in Space Seed, when they wrote Khan, he was a strong personality, but he never technically forced Marla to do anything. One of my favorite scenes in all of Space Seed is when Marla comes to his quarters and he's like, stay or go. But do it because it's what you want to do. Like, don't, I'm not going to force you to do anything. And here we have sort of that version of Khan. It's like, you can follow me. Of course, if you do follow me, it has to be to the utmost, like to the depth.
Right.
But nobody's going to force you. That dynamic is maintained here. I like it because I think it gives Marla in this, and we'll get to this, some courage to stand up to him when she realizes that she is being manipulated. But you have that whole scene that we were discussing with the dissident. His name, I believe, again was Otto. Was it not? No, I wanted to
Joaquin?
Say Otto. It was no. Joaquin was the boy. Ivan was Hugo. Hugo was the dissident.
Okay.
You expect him
to
tell Hugo.
He was the one that took the little trip off the cliff?
Yeah, he took the trip off the cliff because Ivan pushed him. So Ivan is like Khan's buddy. They talk about like the war and when they were, you know, flipping over tanks because they're genetically engineered super strong and all that stuff.
Right.
But this guy Hugo is just saying, look, you said that you were going to lead us to victory on Earth. You didn't. We ran away on a ship. We got woken up on that ship, and the only thing we had to do was commandeer another vessel and take over that, and we were going to conquer the stars. And you couldn't even get that done. So what makes you think, now we're standing here on this plane, okay, it's a fertile plane, there's an inland sea with fresh water, it's, you know, potentially habitable. That's not salt water, right?
Yeah.
It's potentially habitable. Uh-huh. But who says that you're the guy to lead us to an empire here? You failed like three times now. And instead of just killing Hugo outright, Khan uses it as a moment to rally his people to him. And then he takes Hugo aside. He's like, look, bro. And you think he's going to kill him. And he's like, you can follow me or not. Go or stay, but do it because of what you wish. Just know if you go, you'll be exiled. I'm not going to kill you, but you can't come back here. Go build whatever little pathetic fiefdom you think you can build on your own. But this is where the action is going to be. And I found that to be like really in keeping with the character that we saw on TV, because not only can he keep Hugo around to do his bidding because he's another augment and he needs all the people he can get, but he uses Hugo to endear the people to him more. And then the example of Hugo staying is yet another way for him to cement his hold, his sway over everybody in the colony. So just a nice little turn of writing. You would think, especially on a radio drama, which they sometimes tend to be a little bit broad, a little bit by the numbers,
yeah,
you would expect that Khan would kill Hugo. Mm-hmm. So the fact that, okay, Hugo does die, but it's not Khan that does it, and it's this guy Ivan. Now, is Ivan going to be the loose cannon? The one that's supposedly on Khan's side that has sworn to follow him to the death.
Ivan's the one that pushed Hugo off the cliff, right?
Right. He's the Russian dude.
So I guess I was more conspiratorially minded.
Okay.
I think Khan sent Ivan up with Hugo to the cliff to check on his loyalties. And when he said, you know, that he was just saying he was going to, he told Khan that he was going to get the marble for the palace, I think it was.
It was the granite to build his Colosseum.
The granite to build a Colosseum. Thank you.
Yeah. I just listened to it a few hours ago.
but he was basically saying, I told him what he wanted to hear.
Yes, yes.
And then Ivan, hearing that, heard enough to know that he was not going to be loyal to Khan, and that's why he went sailing off the cliff.
So do you think that Ivan acted of his own accord? Did you think that he's
I think it was under orders.
Doing
Khan.
Khan's bidding.
Really? I was kind of getting the Godfather.
I can't. Oh, see, you just saw the Godfather.
Like this guy's Abe Vigoda, maybe.
Right. You're seeing who Abe Vigoda play again? Famous character.
Fish.
Yes, exactly. And his wife, Bernice. That was the best part of the Godfather. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Was Abe Vigoda always old? I think so.
I think he was, yeah. Yeah.
He was born old.
That's funny. Now, I really am looking forward to see if you're right or if I'm right, because I am of the mind that Ivan is acting completely on his own. Maybe in a misguided attempt to help cement Khan's power. But I think something like this is going to be a slow build, and it's going to be something where Ivan and Khan become at odds with one another. That's just the way I'm thinking.
Well, what does Spock say in Space Seed that ultimate power corrupts or something?
Yeah, I don't recall.
He says it in a different way than is normal, which is, you know, power corrupts.
Superior ability breeds superior ambition.
That's it. So maybe you're right to where Ivan's acting on his own. I have to say, through all that scene, they didn't do the radio thing. Like, oh, no, don't push me. I'm going to fall off the cliff. You know, oh, I'm falling. Ah, splat. Oh, he fell. You know, they didn't do any of that. But I saw it in my head.
Wilhelm scream. Ah.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
I think there was just a little bit of gravel sound, maybe. And like a little bit of struggle sound, but I totally knew what happened. Well done. I thought that was probably, I listening to it the third or fourth time, I was like, how did I know what was happening and see it in my head when they really didn't describe it?
I think that that's a testament of the writing, where the writing of this brings you, because it's so completely fleshed out in your mind's eye that it's a fait accompli. You know exactly what's happening. Mm-hmm. Because you've gotten to know these characters somewhat in the course of this 40-minute thing. Mm-hmm. And this part of it's only like 20 minutes. So, I mean, it's very well done. That's why you were able to see it.
There's that just that little sound maybe at the end.
But that's what I mean, like, why it's critically like a different process to write for the ear. You're not just writing a book that someone will then read. You're not just, again, listening to a TV show that requires visual input. It's a complete art unto itself, crafting a good audio drama. And I don't know what kind of experience Kirsten or David had with this, if any, but they sure did their homework, or maybe they're just naturals. I really don't know. I really don't know. But, I mean, kudos to them on that, because that was just one of many just subtle little things that cued you to different drama going on without beating you over the head with it.
I have another question, and I want to take it back to Rosalind Lear and at the beginning of the hearing. But why don't we do that after a break? So go. Or stay, but do it because that is what you wish. We'll be right back. And we're back.
Hey,
now you have to ask permission to stay.
Oh, or my other favorite from Bronx Tale. Now you can't leave.
So if you would like to stay, hit subscribe and then you can stay.
Please.
And if you've already done that, hit the like button.
Yes, please do and then share.
Before the break, we were talking about Rosalind Lear.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she's the main scientist investigating this.
Yes.
At the beginning of this episode, first episode of this audio drama, I love the trial. The hearing, and it brought me back to Space Seed with the bell, and that. Yep. But one thing I noticed, there was a line that somebody, an anonymous source, gave her some of this information. This is kind of like a little bit of a mystery. The only clue I really found in this, and I think I wrote down the quote, was, it's right where she said it would be. So some female, woman, lady, girl. Mm-hmm. Gave her this information. Do we know who it could be? I guessed it might be MacGyver's, and maybe she survives the audio drama, but I'm just guessing right now.
No, because they mentioned in Wrath of Khan that she's dead. Yeah. They said Eel got her.
So, okay. Do we believe Khan now?
Well, you know what? He never said morally. He said my beloved wife.
Oh, so it could have been somebody else that he took as a wife.
Right? So there is no... We've always just assumed that his beloved wife was MacGyver's.
I always did, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe it's not. I mean, the other obvious answer, because we're in new territory with a new augment character, would be a contemporary still then would be La'an. So maybe La'an had some kind of vested interest in this. I don't know. Christina might be available to come on and reprise the character for this.
Oh, that'd be great.
That's just complete. You're just asking me who it might be.
Yeah. Did you have any thoughts in your head while you were listening?
I tell you, no, because I knew that that was going to be the slow burn of the framing device. I know that the framing device is going to be its own drama. And then sort of like the setting off of five stuff is going to be the drama within that drama. I'll tell you the one thing, and I don't like to do this, but the Rosalind Lear character, this is no offense to Sonya Cassidy, seemed like the one that I needed to accommodate myself to the most. She seemed like the one that was reading from a script that was, I'm in an audio drama, and this is a dramatic part. And I got more used to it. I think that she fell into the part a little bit more as it went on. But I feel both her and, quite frankly, George Takei seemed like they were acting, which is one of the old cliches about radio dramas. We're all acting. Mm-hmm. And I think once Tim comes on the screen, or on the scene, he's not on the screen.
Tim is Tuvok.
He nails it.
Yep.
You know, I think he's had a long, I'll say it this way. The time between him having played Tuvok and now, as opposed to the time that Takei has had since the last time he played Sulu, I think it shows.
Yeah, not counting Lower Decks.
Yeah, I guess. And
But I like that they framed this after Star Trek Generations, because, you know, Sulu was already old by then.
Yeah, that's true.
So
that's
helps.
You have to give it in. And Tim still sounds the same.
I think they might have pitched up Tim a little bit, but if not, it was just good. He heightened his tone a little bit.
Yeah.
Because he didn't sound like old Tuvok to me.
It's not like Indiana Jones, the last movie, when it's like 20-year-old Indy and he opens his mouth and it's an 85-year-old man croaking out a line. So
I didn't bump up against any of the acting. If anything, I might have thought that she sounded too early 21st century for the 23rd century.
Okay, I can buy that. Sure, maybe that's what bumped me too. I just really think that this is the part where it was just a little bit of rough sledding to get yourself into the drama. And the fact that she just seems so hell-bent on what's her agenda here. That's what I'm most interested in.
Yeah.
So you have this character, Rosalind Lear. She's saying that she wants to go excavate all of this information about Khan because Marla was going to write the definitive history of one of history's most notorious figures from his time on Earth to his time post-exile by Captain Kirk. But she seems to have some kind of axe to grind against Kirk, and that's where she starts to butt heads with Sulu. So why is she so hell-bent on saying, well, if Kirk is the innocent man that you say, well, what is her beef with Kirk? Why does she think that he was wrong to do what he did?
It made me think, and it made me think that it's like, she has an agenda, definitely, and she has, like, a point of view, which we know isn't correct, because we experienced all this with the characters already, but she's coming in from, like, almost a conspiratorial thing.
Right.
And it's strange to think that about Captain Kirk.
I mean, and that also, so could it be that the person who's feeding her or who fed her the first tantalizing logs from Marla also whispering in her ear and saying, well, actually, Kirk isn't the hero that history makes him out to be, blah, blah, blah.
Would have that perspective? One of the eugenics babies?
So for me, that kind of eliminates La'an as a suspect there.
Yeah.
Because she knows Jim. She almost had, you know, like she had a fling with alternate Jim.
Right.
She almost had a relationship with him. Yeah. So I feel like that she likes Kirk. And I don't think that she would malign his legacy without giving
Janice
him
Lester.
A benefit.
Janice Lester hates Kirk. That's who did it. Sorry, I spoiled it for everybody.
I'm Captain Kirk.
Wouldn't it be funny if they went there because she couldn't be a captain?
Oh, that would be hilarious. I like it. If the actress who did Janice Lester still alive, it would be even better.
That would be amazing. Did you catch that the augments were in Montana? The augment children?
Yeah. Yeah, the augment lab was in Montana. Again with Montana.
Up my ear, Montana.
So this, I guess, Montana sometime in the 90s.
Bozeman?
That's right. You know, who's writing it? Is it, who was it? Brandon Braga that always wrote,
Rick Berman.
One of them always put Montana in.
Could Zephyrin Cochran possibly be a descendant of an augment or an augment embryo that was used later or something. Could that be a thing?
They never said that he had like superior strength. I mean, he was an intelligent guy, but he didn't have the ambition, obviously, that an augment might have because he wanted to be left alone and find an island with naked women. I don't want to retcon that to make it so that just because something happened in Montana means that they're descendants. It's not to say that they couldn't be because obviously they left the Superman fertile so that they could build empires with like standard women, normal women. what are we calling non-augments? People, you know,
humans.
Yeah.
I just always get the conspiracy murder board out and I start unwinding the red yarn while I'm listening to stuff. So I'm always looking for something because you know that old rule where they never say anything that doesn't mean something.
Understood. Yeah. So, but the fact that I feel like Montana is just like maybe even at this point, like an in joke. It's like a 47 almost.
Yeah, almost. Did you get any, were you confused at all over the characters, especially like try to help me with the timeline? Because I know we start out 3 months after Kirk's death and then we go to SETI Alpha 5 and then we're going back to when Khan and the rest of them, the Botany Bay was marooned on SETI Alpha 5. But exiled. It seemed for me to jump like ahead in that behind like 7 years or so. So I might be mistaken there. Did you catch any of that?
No. It seems to me that this was like day one, week one.
Okay. The whole thing was
that's
like
why
day
Marilla
one.
Had when she had the communicator, she was hoping that the Enterprise might even still be in range to
still
come and
in
get
range.
Her.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I like the communicator. Speaking of that, crumbling up the communicator is like when Khan was crumbling up the phaser in Space Seed.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got a thing for technology crushing.
We got to talk about Khan and Marilla. We haven't yet. And
okay.
We've talked about it in terms of what we saw in Space Seed, but to carry it forward on this, I thought they did a great job because with everything that happened on the Enterprise, she does feel that she's more his equal than his woman. And he doesn't see anybody as an equal, really. He just sees people to manipulate, even though he can be very loquacious and inspiring about it. I love the fact that Marla doesn't fall for any of his bullshit. And this comes down to now, we're talking about Naveen Andrews, but Ren Schmidt, she is so fantastic on For All Mankind. Oh, I mean, she basically leads the show at this point. Yeah. Like her and Joel Kinnaman and...
Joel. They're great. I had no idea Joel was Norwegian until a couple days ago, and now I can't unsee it.
Well, he'll always be Rick Flagg to me.
Yep, exactly. But I always thought he had a New Jersey accent. It's Norwegian. I got that way wrong.
Well, Norwegian, New Jersey, it's tomato, tomato.
Yeah.
The fact that Ren comes in and she's just so polished and she's just, it's like she fell into the role naturally. I never had any indication that she was finding her footing as Marla.
No. I almost like this version of Marla better. She seems to have more agency than the character we met in the original episode of Space Seed.
Yeah, and I think that was a fine line for them to walk because you needed this to believably still be the Marla that we saw on the Enterprise for the continuity to work, but you needed to update the sensibility from that 60s damsel sensibility to someone that could go toe-to-toe with a dictator. And she pulled it off seamlessly, in my opinion.
I'm telling you, just like a good book, if you're sucked in the first few pages, first chapter, I was sucked in right away. I mean, it was, I think once we were on the planet and I think they were describing this used to be a huge field, lush vista or something. By then I was already in. The burning the boats. Do you know the history of that? Is that true? What she said that he saved one for himself and all that stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, but I can only imagine that it is true. I've never heard that story before listening to this audio drama, but I can't imagine they would have written it in if it weren't true. Mm. It's almost like hearing about the mythology of Christopher Columbus and then hearing what a monster he truly was.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just like, I think it's some of that going on. And it's also a way to highlight her contempt for Khan at this point when she's just saying, you've never truly loved anybody. You're incapable. She's basically calling him a sociopath.
Well, he is.
And it's like, yeah, but like she didn't know that already. But I guess it hit home the fact that he's using her just like he uses everybody else, just in case they can't get the embryos to come to, you know, term. So
she's really upset about being a broodmare. I think I heard broodmare more in this episode than I have in my whole life.
I think she only said it the one time. It just sticks with
twice.
You.
Twice.
No, I
Three
think it was just
total?
Once.
I don't know.
Tell us down below.
I listened to it four times, so
once.
Maybe that's why. How many times did they say broodmare?
We'll drink every time they do.
But she seemed upset about that. But she loved Khan, and I assumed that they were going to, she wanted to have a family with him and everything. But maybe it got too real.
Yeah, maybe it got too real. Maybe she was intrigued by Khan because she was still looking for an exit if she needed one. Like, maybe her eyes were open once she saw what Khan tried to do to Kirk, but she knew that her career in the fleet was ruined. She would be court-martialed and drummed out of the service, probably served time, at a penal colony or a rehabilitation colony.
Would you like to go to prison or not? That's the question she was answering.
Or you can join Khan and you can, you know. And so I think that she faced with two evils. She took the one where she might have a chance to at least have some kind of fulfilling life as a historian, chronicling the life of one of history's greatest figures, most notorious figures.
And she read Milton.
And then she came down and she found that this maybe wasn't such a great idea. Maybe I'll take my chances back in the world that I belong in with Starfleet. But it's too late.
Yeah.
But she's not pulling any punches. She's not afraid to go toe-to-toe with him, even though she now knows that she's just about wholly dependent on his good graces to survive there. So I my favorite line of this, I guess if we're going to get into, I don't know, should we do some favorite stuff?
Yeah, let's do that. Why not?
All right. Yeah, I know this is like we have much more of a pattern with the episodes, but this is such a different animal.
Yeah, I right? love it.
So, I think that my favorite part and episode crush is obviously Marla, Ren's performance as Marla. And my favorite part was when she said, "Have you ever truly loved anybody?" And he turns around to her and he says, "Love never built an empire." I was like, oh, what a line. That was so cool. So what would your episode crush, favorite part of the episode?
Ren Schmidt, Marla MacGyvers. MacGyvers? Mm-hmm. MacGyvers?
What are you, Captain Kirk?
Yeah, exactly.
It's MacGyvers.
yeah, she's a more of a, she's my favorite MacGyvers as of now. Like, she won me over. I know it's one episode, but if I had to choose, I would say her. Probably because I got a thing for Margot, and I just love her acting. She did a great part in this. My favorite part was probably, I'm going to say, the whole scene thrown off the cliff, because I experienced that most. That and in the cargo bay, maybe, that was MacGyver's quarters, because I have a distinct memory of being there watching it happen. And it was just an audio drama, so that was amazing for me. Anything cool bump you about the episode, other than the voice acting of the one person?
No, I mean, really, because I'm so, in my way, versed in this kind of entertainment, I was very surprised at how nuanced and intricate it was. So, like I said, the one thing that will always bump me, and this is why I can't watch a lot of animation, especially like what they call adult animation, much to the chagrin of the beautiful John Irons.
And me.
I feel like the voice acting always is either way over the top or it falls completely flat. And I was afraid that I was going to get a whole bunch of flat voice acting here. And I didn't, for the most part. It was only that one bit in the beginning with Lear that bumped me. So I wish I could tell you, oh, and this, and oh, and that. But on the whole, and I guess maybe this will be part of my final thoughts, on the whole, this, as I said up top, surpassed my expectations like so much more than I anticipated. I thought that I was going to have to tolerate it and get into it. I'm just completely swept up in it, and
yeah,
it's only episode one.
I'm going to finish this book. I know that.
Yeah, for sure. I'm on board for 8 more episodes. So
and
how about you?
What season? Can they get anything, another season out of Khan?
Anything that bumped you? Or
Maybe not bump me, but I got confused when it was a big group scene and they were playing the game and talking about the half-breed, and I was confused as who was who, because they weren't doing the thing where it was like they're naming their names over and over again and exposition. And of course, you know that you are my son that went to, you know, they weren't doing that. They weren't dumbing it down for us. And I got a little confused there, but I was still able to follow along. And with subsequent listenings, I want to say viewings, I was able to catch on to all the different characters. Were you confused at all of who was who at all?
No, but again, I was walking the dog and I had my earbuds in, so I was completely focused on just this. So it all came to me pretty well. I wanted to listen to the episode. As a matter of fact, I did listen to the episode a second time to get all of the nuance, to get maybe some of the plot stuff that, you know, naturally, especially if you're hearing something for the first time, things are going to get by you. So once I knew where the story was going, it was nice to go back and listen back and see how they built in the different elements that led to the ending of this first episode and where they might be going as it goes on. But so, yeah, no bumps. Surprisingly, just honestly, I'm shocked.
Yeah. They did something good.
Yeah. Yep.
Although this whole audio drama was done by puppets. You just don't know it.
Well, it's okay because in my mind's eye, they're real living people. He's a real boy, Geppetto.
Yeah, they were good. It was Naveen Andrews, so that's good. Final thoughts and ratings. I loved it. I can't wait to listen to episode 2 as soon as I hang up from this. And I'm going to give it 5 out of 5 just because I'm blown away and intrigued, and I can't wait to keep going with this. 5 seagrasses that need salt.
Oh, I thought it was the squishy squid things that needed
Not
salt.
Not sure. But they just kept mentioning that the water wasn't salt water and stuff needed salt. So I found that interesting. But that was the only thing I could
Fair
eat.
Enough. Fair enough.
Because everything else was slimy and gross. So I would just sit there eating a seaweed salad, basically. What about you, Chris?
Well, again, at the risk of gushing even more than we already have, going to give it 5 out of 5 because I'm just really intrigued about where it's going. I'm excited about the quality that we already have. And I'm going to say, what would it be? 5 out of 5 loquacious, manipulative con speeches. And I'm not trying to manipulate anybody. I really want to hear what everybody down in the comments thinks about this episode. Were you as impressed with it as we are? What did bump you, if anything bumped you? Where did you fall down on it if you couldn't get through it? We really want to know, because it feels like, you know, usually we have a little bit more of a measured discussion about things, but I'm just not that guy tonight. So yeah, I'm just looking forward to it. But
I'm already gonna buy this when it comes out on audio CD. Like I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah. So
they'd have to do a lot to ruin it for me now. So I can't wait to see what's going to happen. So speaking of next episode, they're coming out weekly, right? Which is every Monday, I believe, Chris?
I believe so, yeah. They're saying this coming weekly. They're going to drop on here, Star Trek Day.
59th anniversary. So then every Monday, we'll have a new episode. So what's coming up next with that, Chris?
It's Con 2 Electric Boogaloo. I don't know the title, honestly. Yep. It's just it's Star Trek Con Part 2.
Yeah, that I haven't listened, so I don't know the title yet. So, because all it says is press screener episode 2. So
yeah, pretty much.
That's the one we'll be reviewing, and we might do I don't know the series finale of Strange New Worlds in the meantime.
Not series finale.
Season finale.
Season finale.
Whoops. Cut that out.
So you can listen to us talk about that if you're itching and you need to fill in the void between us gushing about Con Episode 1 and Con Episode 2. You can hear us talk about Season 3, Episode 10.
I'm thinking Star Trek Con is a success. I think right out of the gate, they got me, and I can't wait to see. It's their job to fail, right? Is that how that goes?
Yeah, that's what I always say. When I have good employees, I tell them, listen, this is your job to lose.
Yep.
So Nick, Kirsten, David, this is, I'm your audience member to lose. I mean, you have me lock, stock, and barrel right now. You're going to have to do a lot to turn me off.
And I'm not worried. Story by Nick Meyer. And he's a very good writer, as we know, director and all that stuff. And then we have good authors, like, putting it into words on a script. So, yeah, this is going to be great. I'll be sad November 3rd because that'll be the last episode. So make sure to like, subscribe, comment down below, and ring that bell so you get notified when we talk about Con the next time. Con 2 Electric Boogaloo.
And so, also subscribe to the podcast. Put it on your regular feed so that you get the new episodes as they drop, because I think the subscription numbers are what's going to drive a project like this going forward, whether they try to repeat this experiment with a different Star Trek story.
I think they might have something, a Star Trek podcast. It's a good idea.
Who ever heard of such a thing? As far as I know, we're the only two middle-aged white guys on the entire internet talking about Star Trek. Obviously.
Yep. Obviously.
Obviously.
All right.
Nobody else is doing it.
So thank you, Chris. And thank you, everybody, for listening and watching. And for Trexploration, I'm Albie.
And I'm Chris.
And we'll see you next time.
On SETI Alpha 5.
This is SETI Alpha 5. Charles, get ready to the cosmic tide. Get our militant look. 2 times, 3 times, 5.